Hello, folks. Welcome to the SolarFit Renewable Energy Show. This is Bill Gallagher. Mighty glad you joined us today. We've got a great show today. We've got my good friend George Kavros with SACE, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, going to be joining us shortly. And, you know, each week we answer a question that we get in our office. And this one is from Brenda in Ormond Beach. And her question is, how many solar panels will I need to heat my pool? Well, that's a great question, Brenda. And there's a few things we look at. Of course, we look at the size of the pool. Look at whether it's screened or unscreened and the direction that the panels will face and, you know, their desired swim season. And last of all, the perfect temperature. What's the ideal temperature for the family? And, you know, we put all that stuff together and give you a nice little package and figure out what you need and get you started. So we do free site evaluation. So if you'd like to have that for your home, you can get us give us a call to Flagler at 445-7606 or Volusia County at 441-2299. We'd be glad to help you. And thanks again, Brenda, for the call. Hello, George. Welcome to the SolarFit Renewable Energy Show.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, it's glad I'm glad to have you back. You know, we've had the good fortune of having several folks, friends of ours from SACE on, and it's just a pleasure talking to all you folks. Hey, George, before we start, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today, give us a little bit of background, you know, how you got involved with SACE.
Oh, well, I've been a clean energy advocate for almost a decade. I moved to Florida about 20 years ago and, you know, just saw a need for environmental advocacy. I was just an advocate in my spare time at first, and then I joined some local conservation groups and eventually decided that if I wanted to make more of an impact, I would to go to law school. So I got a law degree, and when I came out of law school, around the 2006-07 timeframe, you know, I joined up with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and we started battling or challenging proposed coal plants, as did some other groups around the state, and there were seven, I believe, proposed at that time, and I'm happy to report that none of them came to fruition based on our hard work and the communities that those plants were proposed for hard work. And since then, we've sort of pivoted to, okay, if not coal, if not dirty energy, then how do we move forward on clean energy? So since then, I've been focused with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan clean energy group, on trying to get the rules and regulations right at the state level to promote more energy efficiency and definitely more meaningful, clean solar power development.
Well, George, we've had an opportunity to be in several meetings together in the Public Service Commission and other venues, and you really know your stuff and conduct yourself well, and what an asset for all the citizens of Florida to have a guy like you behind us there.
You're very kind, Bill.
Well, it's true. It's absolutely true. Tell us a little bit about SACE's history.
SACE is a regional nonprofit. It's about 25 years old. Now, it's headquartered in Knoxville, Tennessee, operates in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, and has staff in Florida as well, of which I am one, and based in the Fort Lauderdale area.
Good. And it's been around for about 25 years, you say?
Correct. Wow. We've seen the energy landscape change quite dramatically in 25 years. It hasn't changed as rapidly as it is in other parts of the country. The Southeast is always a challenge. Hey, you know, it's that's why we're here. You know, everybody needs a challenge in life, and certainly this region, you know, needs good advocates.
Is there any coincidence between having the southern states, which are, you know, were predominantly coal? Was that really the impetus for SACE to focus on this part of the landscape?
I think certainly that was its genesis, was that this area is so heavily reliant on coal, certainly 20, 25 years ago, much less so now, as the cost of coal and complying with emission standards related to coal and the low price of natural gas, we're just seeing a radical shift in the energy mix of the whole country, where a lot of states and a lot of companies are moving away from coal and more to natural gas. And, you know, we're also trying to push them to diversify into energy efficiency and especially solar power.
Yeah, fantastic. And we're going to talk about that shortly. Let's talk a bit of, if we could, about climate change. You know, there's a lot of, let's say, controversy and about that. Just give us the 30,000-foot view on climate change.
Well, the climate is changing. We are seeing more disruptive weather patterns. We know that the planet is warming. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which consists of thousands of scientists from several hundred countries, comes out with reports every 5 years. Their latest report, again, leaves no doubt the science is in. The world is warming. It is due to human activity since the Industrial Revolution. In fact, we're at about 400 parts per million carbon dioxide in the atmosphere right now. It's caused at least the CO2 through the burning of fossil fuels. So there's a real imperative to move away from the burning of fossil fuels to generate electricity and also to power our cars. We have a real moral obligation to future generations to do that, and certainly solar power is a tool in the toolbox to get us there.
Sure would, which of course need to delve a little bit into the politics of this and why the pushback when it's so intuitive that that this is happening and what's causing it. What's the pushback for both nationally and regionally on the concept of climate change?
Well, yeah, that's an excellent question. Obviously, the political discussion isn't consistent with the scientific discussion. And that's because there's a status quo in this country and throughout the world that whose primary business is related to the burning of fossil fuels. We're talking about some of the most powerful entities and well-financed entities in the world. And generally, these entities, if they're private companies, their main goal, in fact, they have a fiduciary duty to maximize shareholder profit. So they're not necessarily looking out for the betterment of society, but to maximize their profits. And they've injected a lot of doubt through third parties on the science of climate change. So we've had to kind of even go back and re-argue what we thought was a settled issue back in the early 2000s. There's been just a real pushback on even the science of climate change, but I think, people are starting to come around on that, especially given the strange weather events we're starting to see, hurricanes in December, tornadoes during the winter, droughts and heat waves. And I think people intuitively are starting to get it, but there are those that simply, because it has become, unfortunately, a partisan issue, just refuse to accept the science out of hand.
Well, you're very tactful, George, in the way you said that. I really couldn't have probably expressed it in those terms, but we're right on track with you there. But good job on that. You guys have always, encouraged energy efficiency. Why is that important?
If we use energy efficiency, well, let me take a step back. Simply put, energy efficiency is the cleanest and the fastest and the cheapest way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It helps reduce folks' energy use, which helps reduce their electric bills, and we additionally puts less carbon in the air. So, if we want to meet some of these short-term targets for CO2 emissions, both in the United States at the state level and even internationally, you want to go for what's often referred to as a low-hanging fruit, which is energy efficiency. You want to use energy smarter, and in doing so, it's a win-win for everybody who does it. You reduce your energy use, you save money on your bills, and you're leaving a more sustainable energy future for your children as well.
Yeah, very good. Years ago, and let's talk a little bit about FECA in a minute, what that means, but the whole idea of conservation was just, what could make more sense than that, and energy efficiency combined with it, because you know, at least in my mind, if you use those two factors along with renewable energy, it reduces the potential for having to build additional coal or nuclear or gas-fired plants. Doesn't it just make sense to do that?
It absolutely does. You know, capturing demand or trying to displace demand by customers to use less energy, and in this case, I'll use electric utilities. You know, that's the lowest cost option to them. I mean, it costs 1 to 2 to 3, possibly 4 cents a kilowatt hour to go out there to run a program that helps reduce energy use. By contrast, you know, the retail rate that I'm paying right now is close to 12 cents. And, you know, you simply can't build a power plant for 3 cents a kilowatt hour. Florida Power and Light is proposing a nuclear plant in its Turkey Point location in South Miami, and currently that's proposed to have a 15 cent a kilowatt hour impact to generate that power. So, you know, take your pick, 2 cents a kilowatt hour or 15 cents a kilowatt hour. Additionally, you can deploy energy efficiency very quickly. It only takes a year or so to really get programs ramped up, whereas a nuclear plant can take 10 to 15 years to get built, if it ever gets built at all.
And, you know, is it not true that the funding for these nuclear plants, by and large, are done by the ratepayers, in part because Wall Street really doesn't feel like supporting that effort?
Yeah, that's a very good point, and one that a lot of folks aren't familiar with. But there is a law in Florida that shifts the financial risk of constructing a nuclear plant from the company's shareholders to the company's customers. The customers, in fact, pay the upfront what are called pre-construction costs, and then if at any time, and plus they pay the interest on the money that the company borrows, and also pay a return to its shareholders of any invested dollars by its shareholders. And in the end, if the company decides to abandon the project, company is allowed to recover the full cost of their investment from their customers. So in essence, there's zero risk on the shareholder side, and really the customers end up bearing 100% of the risk, especially if the company decides to abandon the project.
Jeez. Was there some kind of cloud over Tallahassee that put everybody to sleep when this was passed? Because it just doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, you know, at the time, I think they were sold on nuclear plants or reactors that would cost $3 billion, $4 billion. You know, right now, Florida Power and Light's costs are up to about 20, maybe a little over $20 billion for two reactors. And, you know, that's today's dollars. Who knows what it will be in a couple of years. So that said, there's also a lot of big power company influence in Tallahassee. There was a report that was recently published that found that power companies had contributed more than $18 million to political campaigns from the 2004 time frame to 2012. So that nuclear cost recovery law was passed in 2006, and they spent more than $12 million on lobbying just in the last 5 years. So that certainly doesn't hurt.
I wouldn't expect that would make a difference to you, just that little 18, 12.
It's hard to compete with that kind of influence.
It is, but you know, it's really the public, the voters, that can make a difference. Isn't it, George?
Absolutely.
It's absolutely.
You know, if there's one thing that legislators care more about than getting elected, it is getting reelected. So the more we know about the votes our legislators take, and the more active we are in getting out and voting on clean energy issues, I guarantee you, you'll start seeing them pay a lot more attention to clean energy issues if they know their seat is at stake.
You know, the second scariest thing to not getting reelected in Tallahassee is to lose your parking spot or get on the same floor as a delicatessen or something. Those are all scary thoughts. We're going to have to take a short break. Folks, stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Did you ever think the day would come when you could heat and cool your house using solar power only? Well, the future is here. You can now solar air condition and solar heat your home.
SolarFist sets you free.
A solar comfort heating and air conditioning system offered exclusively by SolarFit. Give us a call and let's talk about solar fitting your home. 445-7606. 445-7606.
SolarFit your life and set yourself free with the sun's free energy.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. My name is Bill Gallagher, and I'm here with my friend George Kavros with SACE, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. And George, just before the break, we were kidding a little bit about, you know, our legislators and things going out in Tallahassee. But man, I'll tell you, that can be a fairly frustrating place. And as much time as I spent there, and you've spent 10 times as much, I don't know how you do it. Let's talk a little bit about FECA, and then we'll kind of delve into what's going on there. What is FECA?
Sure. FECA stands for the Florida Energy Efficiency and Conservation Act. It's a law that was passed in 1980, and it's a conservation goal-setting process where the Public Service Commission, which is the state agency that's charged with regulating the state's big power companies, is supposed to set energy conservation goals, essentially energy efficiency goals for the state's biggest power companies for a 10-year period, and then those goals are reviewed every 5 years. We had our last goal setting in 2009, and we are just now going into the 2014 goal setting process. We have a hearing in July, and there's a lot on the table this time around. As you may recall, in the 2009 FECA proceedings, the FECA law had been amended, and the PSC was charged with encouraging what they call demand-side renewables, essentially rooftop solar and solar water heaters and those types of things. And they were tagged with a title of pilot programs. The utilities were supposed to spend a certain percentage of dollars on offering rebates for those pilot programs. The results are in now, according to the utility testimony, which was filed recently. They allege that the rebate program is not cost-effective. There's a lot of cross-subsidization in the program, which is code for, they argue that poor people have to pay for rich people's solar systems, and that solar provides little value to their system. And it's really disappointing that they and they're all on message, apparently, on this, that they portray solar in this light.
Well, here's a question I have, and you can help me answer this because it's kept me awake many nights. The solar portion, okay, of the FECA, the solar portion is about 17 cents per ratepayer. And I guess it could be argued that that's onerous and difficult for people of, less economic means. But explain, if you would, why it's okay to have like a $9.50 advanced nuclear recovery charge that doesn't fall under that category. Why is that not taken into consideration?
Right. That's actually a two-part answer. First, you're right. It's not a level playing field. Ask the Duke customers who are on the hook for a couple billion dollars for a nuclear plant that was shuttered, and a plan that was abandoned by them. Is that not, they're going to get nothing for those dollars, and that has caused significant increases on their bills. But really, the even larger question is, what benefit are they allocating to solar when they make these statements? I've heard FPL representatives say time and time again that they give solar no capacity value, which means it doesn't help them defer any power plants. They undervalue the transmission and distribution benefits of solar and the fuel savings. And so what we really need to do is take a step back and have an honest conversation on what the value of solar really is. The utilities like to harp on the cost. They use arguments of cross-subsidization. And, this is going on in other states as well, because the utility model is threatened by distributed generation. And, you know, I think we just need to sit down and have an honest discussion on what the value of solar really is rather than just, you know, attacking it. And, you know, I think the utilities around the country, and especially in this state, would be better served instead of trying to stop the solar revolution, which is a direction we're headed with a drop in solar and solar just becoming more available to folks. You know, where's that sweet spot? How can we both agree to enjoy the benefits of the coming solar power generation, solar power movement?
Well said, George. You know, and our friend Carl Rabago, very instrumental across the states and trying to spread this message of determining a true value, VOS value of solar. Because, you know, another important factor that's completely left out of the equation is the health benefits. I mean, how many people are protected from emphysema or health conditions without being subjected to some other type of energy? What could be more clean than the sun coming up and creating energy for free and you're putting it on your house and having a low utility bill? It's 85% of the people believe that that's the direction we should be going.
It's absolutely. There's strong support for solar, and absolutely. I'd rather have the power coming from a clean, renewable resource rather than these very inefficient and dirty peaking units that they have to turn on and off during, you know, the hottest days in the summer when everyone's air conditioning is humming along.
Right. Well, as you know, a couple of years ago, they had trying to determine if FECA was in the best interest. Independent study, I guess is what the words I'm looking for. And the independent study, much to the utility company's surprise, came back absolutely positive for FECA. But as recent as last year, both Duke and FPL said, well, no, that really it isn't in the best interest. Tell us about that. How does that work?
Yes, there was a study that had to be performed by the Public Service Commission on the value, the continuing value of FECA. And, you know, I was kind of a little disappointed in the way they structured the study, you know, in the way they asked the question. You know, they said, is FECA still in the public interest? Well, of course it is. But in any event, they went ahead, hired consultants, and they came back and said, sure, I mean, absolutely, it's in the public interest. You know, why would you build more expensive power generation when you know, energy efficiency can get you there for a third of the cost. So this FECA process is valuable, but you do need PSC commissioners who are willing to ask tough questions, who are willing to be curious, and who want to balance the interests of the utility with that of the customer. But right now we have a PSC commission in place, which is very compliant based on historical, you know, decisions in the last couple of years, very compliant to the state's biggest power companies, and not particularly curious and not particularly interested in stepping out and taking a stand.
You know, when I think of the Public Service Commission, and just the words connotate public service, but really when you drill down to what is happening, it really is more of a utility protective service. I mean, I hate to use those words, but in fact, one of the commissioners actually said, well, look, we're not really a public service commission. We're here to make sure that things go well for whatever slide. I think what we need is a new grand jury. We need judges. We need people that are not partisan to overlook this and just use some common sense and listen to the people, which very rarely happens. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, perhaps we could go to a elected public service commission.
I agree.
Right now, there's a handful of applicants that are selected by the legislature, again, a place where the utilities have a lot of influence, and then they are appointed by the governor. But, you know, that said, they also do need to hear from people like you and me. So I would encourage your listeners to shoot them an email. You know, they hear a lot from the utilities. They see them, you know, on a biweekly basis. They appear before them all the time. They meet them at conferences, you know, for a drink at the bar afterwards. So they need to hear from customers. And, you know, the more we can promote that, you know, it can only help our cause.
Oh, for sure, George. What is the best route? What if the folks that are listening in today, how would you recommend that they do that? Can they do it through SACE? Do they do it just go to their legislator? Tell us the best way for them to do it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can visit the first of all, I would encourage them just to visit the SACE website and get more information about what's going on with solar, with the new program that Florida Power and Light has proposed. It's a related kind of a meager 2.4 megawatt green pricing program for the residential sector primarily. And, you know, this pales in comparison to what's going on with our utilities to the north, which are just, you know, just going gangbusters on solar. But, you know, they are at www.psc.state.fl.us. Again, that's psc.state.fl.us. And their pictures are right there. You click on their pictures. It'll send you directly to their email, and I'll shoot them an email. Tell them you support solar. Tell them you want to see meaningful solar development in Florida, because they will be deciding on the rebate program or some alternative in the upcoming PICA proceedings this year.
Okay. George, great. Thank you so much for the website, too, and we definitely want to go to SACE website, too. And just, we only got about a minute left, so just real briefly, you know, I was reviewing some of the information about FPL's proposed replacement of the FICA, and it really had me confused, because it looks just like a program they had about 7 years ago where people made donations, and that money was misused, and the program was shut down. It looks like that's trying to be repeated. Can you tell us what that's about?
Sure, sure. You know, if the program sounds familiar, it should, because it's strikingly familiar to their Sunshine Energy Program that was scrapped by the Florida Public Service Commission in 2008 for poor management. As it turned out, 80% of all customer contributions didn't go to the development of renewable energy, but rather to FPL's administrative costs. And this program is very similar. They want you, at least as it appears right now, to donate $9 a month. And FPL promises to build about 2.4 megawatts of solar over the course of 3 years. You know, certainly we can do better than that in Florida. You know, FPL is the biggest power company in the state, so how they view solar really matters. And, you know, they need to think big, and they're not thinking big right now.
George.
And, you know, if you want to send a message to them, just visit our website at cleanenergy.org, and you can send a message directly to the president.
Beautiful, yeah. George. Well, we're out of time, so we're going to sign off. George, thank you so much, and keep up the good fight up there. You're out protecting all the citizens of Florida. We really appreciate everything you do.
Thanks for your time, Bill.
Thanks, George. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Well, that completes our show today, folks. I hope you enjoyed hearing from George Kavros, my friend at SACE. They're doing an outstanding job. And go on their website and, you know, send a letter to the fellows up at FPL and let them know that you need and want clean energy in Florida. Got to sign off for now. Have a great weekend. See you next week.